I'm very pleased to welcome all of our listeners to episode 10 of the Catalpa Escape podcast series. But most importantly, I'm pleased to welcome back Margot O'Byrne, our storyteller. Hello, Margot.
Hello, Michael. It's great to be back.
Isn't it? And in terms of the historical narrative, we're just sort of a month sh or two short of the final escape of the Fenians. At the end of episode nine, everything seemed a little bit up in the air, or more accurately, on the water, trying to work out if there was enough in calm conditions to have the Catalpa leave Bunbury and head towards Fremantle. What was happening? Just remind our listeners.
Well, that's right. So, if the listeners to the previous episode will remember, the captain was ready to go, but then what happened is that the storm came up in Bunbury, and the ship dragged anchor, dragged both of its anchors, and the captain had to return to Bunbury. He quickly fired off yet another telegram to Breslin, advising him of the delay. And so we have Breslin up here in Fremantle. Desmond himself had come down that the co-operative here on land. Desmond was a wheelwright working, remember, up in Perth. And so Desmond had come down all prepared to go, ready to gallop off on the Saturday morning down to Rockingham. And then, of course, they got the telegram from Captain Anthony. And they really didn't know how long it would take for the Catalpa to be repaired. It could have taken weeks, in fact.
One of the further issues, of course, you've got the Fenians who know things are happening. They're all tucked away, particularly on Good Friday and probably Easter Sunday from memory as well, while the big regatta is going on in Perth and people are having a good time. So remind us, do they get word that there are things happening but not happening?
Well, by good fortune. Now, remember that one of the Fenians, Robert Cranston, was actually the messenger for the prison controller general. So the main head honcho at the prison would send Cranston out to all around the town to deliver and pick up messages to various people. And he happened to be in town that evening. Breslin was aware. Breslin must have had absolute, fingers into everything going on. So he knew that Cranston was delivering a message, and he had Captain Anthony's telegram read to him. So to give word to Wilson and the others that the planned escape the next morning had to be postponed.
Well, the coincidences in this story, the freedoms that some of them had. Robert Cranston has made himself trusted, and he's out and about in Fremantle, and he's able to get word back to his Fenian mates. Well, it all looks like then it's going slow. But what happens on Saturday, the 15th?
Well, we remember, listeners from last episode will remember that, of course, the Catalpa did manage to get away. Things weren't as grim as they originally thought. So Anthony went back to the telegraph office, sent one last telegram to Breslin and saying that he was leaving and that he had no doubt that Breslin would be heading for York on Monday morning.
Well, that's as good a code as any, I suppose. He's not going inland, he's going straight down to Rockingham to help them all escape. That's the plan anyway. So, how does the sailing go? Is it all plain sailing for Captain Anthony?
Well, it pretty much is actually. So by noon on Sunday, they had arrived 20 nautical miles south of Rottnest Island, the Rottnest Lighthouse. That was their marker. And the first mate, Sam Smith, who we remember as the only other person on board, apart from the carpenter Duggan, who knows what's going on, and he knew about the planned escape and he knew about the gravity of the task that he was facing and Anthony were that they were both facing in the coming time. So Anthony was going to take the whaleboat to Rockingham, and Smith was instructed to keep the Catalpa out of range of the lighthouse and to maintain a sharp lookout for Anthony on his return.
Now, local people listening to this will know immediately that there's a bit of a distance between Rockingham and Rottnest Island, where that lighthouse is. So they've headed in that direction, but they will have to come back down near Garden Island to get into the Rockingham area.
That's correct. So, for people who aren't local, there's a very narrow passage between. So, Garden Island runs south of Perth. We've got a big sound called Cockburn Sound, and along one edge of the sound runs Garden Island, very long, thin island. And at the bottom of it, the part between Garden Island and Point Perrin on the coast is a very narrow opening that only really a whale boat could come in. The Catalpa would never have been able to come in there.
No. So everything's ready in the sense that Captain Anthony's ready to helm, as people like to say, the whale boat. No doubt has to take a few people with him. Does he take Sam Smith?
No. Well, he needs Sam to stay on board the Catalpa. He needs the rock in the other, strong character in the story to be there lest anything should happen, and mainly unless, it's quite possible that Anthony would have been arrested when he came on shore. So he said to Sam Smith, he said, "If I do not come back, use your best judgment. Go whaling or go home, as you like."
Well, comforting words, not really. And Sam Smith had his fingers and toes crossed, hoping that it all goes to plan. So what does our captain do in relation to the whale boat and the crew?
Okay, so he's thought very carefully about who to select for the crew, and he's chosen Mr. Silver, the third mate. He's chosen Toby, the boat steerer, and we met Toby early on when they were hunting whales. He was a very skilled boat steerer. And Lewis, who was from Portugal, and Mopsy and Lombard, who were two fellows from Malaya, I suppose it would have been called then.
I don't think they were their birth names, Mopsy and Lombard, but
Probably not. Probably not.
and do they have sort of provisions? Do they have, a tucker? Were they ready for everything?
Yes, well, the captain came up on board, up on deck, and he threw his own coat into the whaleboat, stowed away some hard bread, 2 barrels of water, and half of a boiled ham. He ordered the boat to be lowered, and then he told each man that they were to take a coat with them, which sort of surprised the men, but being good sailors, they obeyed orders without question.
Now, do they? I'm assuming they don't have a sail. This is a whale boat, and as we've heard in previous stories, they have to row these things, and someone has to steer it. Is that the way it works?
They do have to row and they do have to steer, but they also had a small sail.
Ah, well, that's useful, particularly if you pick up a wind. And is it all plain sailing as they head off to Rockingham?
Okay, so that it was 1 o'clock when the boat left the ship, and all was well. And Captain Anthony expected that he would probably spend the night in Rockingham, and assuming that the escape went without a hitch, that they would be ready to leave Rockingham by noon the next day. So he put the small sail onto the whale boat, and she made good progress towards the coast.
All right. And then you're making me think that didn't remain the case.
No, because just before dark, when they were in close under Garden Island, the sail was taken down, the oars were shipped, because the captain didn't want to make any landing before nightfall. He didn't want to be seen at all. But suddenly, they were startled by the sound like roaring thunder, and in an instant, they saw breakers almost 10 feet high making directly for the boat. The captain shouted orders to his men to look out, stow the oars, don't get damaged. I mean, imagine this. Here they are, they've come all this way around the world to do the rescue, and they get wrecked at the bottom of Garden Island.
It could easily have happened. I mean, these days you'd be lucky to see a 10-foot high wave there, but in any event, it all blew up. As you say, it's a channel there. These days there's a causeway through. So they're heading to Rockingham. They're going through. They're trying to stay out of everyone's way, hoping it'll be dark. They've already worked out, because they've marked the spot previously, Captain Anthony and Breslin, where they're going to camp the night. And do they make it?
They do. They come through the passageway there. They're lifted high into the air, and then suddenly all is quiet because, of course, they've reached the very smooth waters of Coburn Sound.
Well, some of the early Navy people from Britain thought Coburn Sound was one of the most beautiful natural ports in the entire world, and most days it's pretty flat there. So they at that point either had a bit of wind in their little sail, plus a little bit of oar work by the men, and they make the appointed spot.
They do. And I don't know whether it was good management or good luck, Michael, but they landed within 300 yards of where Captain Anthony had placed the stake on the previous visit with Breslin.
Amazing. So presumably they get out the dry bread, excuse me, their water, no Navy rations of brandy or rum or something,
No, we're.
and all I have to do basically is keep out of sight and go to sleep, get up the next morning, wait for the people to arrive at the appointed hour, and paddle off. Does it all go according to plan?
Simple as, yes. So the crew hauled the boat up onto the sand, and then they were told to fall asleep in the grass. But Anthony, of course, walked the beach for that night. He was anxiously waiting for what the morning would bring.
Well,
So.
I mean, everything's happening. We've talked about the fact there was this big regatta weekend in Perth. It was the Easter weekend, Good Friday. Even today, nothing happens on Good Friday, it seems. People are doing all sorts of other things on the Easter Sunday, and Easter Monday things start to get back to normal. So in Fremantle at this point, as you've said, Breslin wasn't sure how things were going to work out. It was
No, he wasn't.
Did
So,
he learn anything different?
well, he remember he on the Saturday morning he received the Breslin received the telegram from Anthony saying that he'd certainly sail that day, and that he'd supposed that Breslin would head for York on Monday. And Breslin replied, and so everything was set in place. So once he knew that the Catalpa was on his way, he had a letter smuggled up to Wilson. And the letter said, and I'll quote, "We have money, arms, and clothes. Let no man's heart fail him, for this chance may never occur again."
I think we sort of get it. When I hear that, though, I think it's just slightly unusual. He doesn't say, "Boys, we're about to go." He says, "We have money, arms, and clothes." What's meant to resonate for the six Fenians in all of that?
I think it's like, don't lose heart, don't get scared, you know. Now, remember, Breslin's full of bravado. He's had a life, you know, out in America and in Sydney and in San Francisco and on boats all around the world. These other chaps have been in prison for 10 years. You know, you get institutionalized and your courage might fail you. So he was, I think, revving them up. In good form, like, we've got everything here for you. We've got money, we've got arms. So, you know, if it comes to a fight, we'll stand with you and we'll fight them.
I'm left with the strange impression. I mean, this is only, a few decades into the settlement, and Fremantle's still a small town, but you almost have the impression that some of these, particularly the more trusted Fenians and other prisoners, wander around the place. We had Cranston send into town the other night. Is there any more contact between any of them and the Fenians?
Yes, well, Breslin actually goes to just to make sure that Wilson, because Wilson's the leader as far as Breslin's concerned. It's Wilson that's going to bring the other men into order, and so Breslin goes down to the jetty where he knows Wilson is working, and when the warder's not looking, he mouths the words "Monday morning."
Well, that's giving it to it, and all of our listeners will remember it was Wilson who wrote the original letter, wanting to be, rescued from that hellhole. So it's on for
It's
young and
on.
old,
It's on.
and here we are. It's Sunday afternoon, and presumably, I don't know how word gets down to Desmond, but he must be waiting on the word as well. He needs to get back, or is he already in Fremantle?
No, he comes back down here on the Sunday afternoon, so we don't know how he got the word about that. Perhaps King galloped up to Perth and gave him the word, or maybe they sent him a telegram too. But he arrives in Fremantle, but his horses are a fairly poor looking pair of horses.
These are the horses that are meant to convey everyone down to Rockingham.
Exactly, the
And
getaway horses, Michael.
well, I mean, this is it's cast of thousands, really. It's not only Breslin and Desmond. You've mentioned King, he's still around the place. And what about that codger Brennan who turned up?
Brennan's here. Brennan's here, and they realise that they have to take Brennan with them. Trouble as he might be, he's better with them than left here behind.
Oh my goodness! I'm just starting to do a count. We've got Captain Anthony and five of his crew. Six of them have taken the whaleboat in. We've got these four operatives now milling around in Fremantle. So got the score up to 10, and we've got the six Fenians.
That's right. And remember, there were two other,
Yes.
the IRB men,
Yes.
Walsh and McCarthy, but they're going to remain behind.
They're going to quietly,
Oh, they
let.
have a role too.
Oh well, we'll come back to them. All right. Well, they don't have to get on the. They don't have to get on a whaleboat by the sound of it. So we need some decent horses. I mean, it's
Yes,
like
but
they these days you'd go down to one of the hire car companies in Freo and get a big van that you'd fit everybody into. But what did they do?
well, as I said, Desmond arrived with a fairly poor-looking pair of horses, and he did even offered the groom in Perth an extra £2 to get him a good pair, but they were all engaged,
Oh, there were
and Desmond
adapters on.
found the same thing.
Ah.
So, because the owner of the stable had given the good horses to the superintendent of the water police, so that he could go to Perth for the regatta day.
Well, something's more important than Fenian escapes, of course. Now, let's come to the Perth Regatta Day. I mean, it's a big thing. I mean, in the colonies in those days, it's equivalent to Brendan circuses. You show a little bit of,
It's a
Turn it on
very
for
big day.
the citizens.
That's right. Well, it was a great day. So we had the Controller General and the Superintendent of the prison both up there, as well as the Governor of Western Australia and many spectators. They were all, just hankering to get up to Perth Water for the regatta day. People travelled up there by boat or by horse, and they assembled there on the Swan River for a pleasant day watching the festivities.
And what sort of things happen? I mean, people will be interested in this, Margaret.
Yes, well, some of the features of the regatta, you'll be pleased to know, Michael, that there were sailing and rowing races as well as swimming events. Now, for the sailing, if you had a 14-foot dinghy, you could take part in the 4-mile race, and the prize for that was £4.
Well, that's not bad.
Yes, but it gets a bit more if you've got a yacht.
Oh,
If you've
goodness.
got a yacht over the 12-mile distance, you could receive a prize of £12.
Oh, and what about the swimming?
The 400-yard swimming race, you could take home £2.
Well, that's pretty tough. That's the hardest working person. But then again, the labourers always get paid least.
Yes, that's.
So I mean, if you called the man from Scotland Yard in and you just sort of double checked with him and said, when would be a good time for the Fenians to sort of fly the coop? When would it be?
Well, clearly it would have been Easter Monday because half of Fremantle were up there in Perth, and so the streets were empty. So any unforeseen activity going on, with a few kind of stray convicts and prisoners in the streets, would have been pretty much unnoticed. So I think our man from Scotland Yard must have been up there at the regatta as well, Michael.
Oh golly. Well, it's good for our heroes. But so what do we know about the Monday morning in Fremantle, Margot? What?
Okay, we know that it's 5:30 a.m. Breslin wakes King and Desmond. Brennan has already been awake and dressed, and he leaves for Rockingham at 6 a.m.
Aha.
So he's got a small two-wheeled cart, or one, which would have been one horse, and he is taking their bags, so taking their things away. And at 7 o'clock, Breslin goes to Albert's stable on Henry Street and finds that his pair of horses are in the nice light four-wheel trap, are harnessed and waiting.
Very convenient.
So he asks the groomsman to let them stand for 20 minutes while he makes sure that Desmond has his horses in harness and is up and ready to go.
So
Desmond,
what time are they planning to get away? Pretty quickly.
pretty quickly, yes. So we know that the prisoners wake early. We haven't got an exact time that they leave the prison to go to work, but it seems like it was around 7:30 that the prisoners are already out, in their work gangs. So Desmond leaves Fremantle by a side street, and after a few turns, he heads out for the Rockingham Road.
Now, again, locals will know these, but also be a bit confused by it, as locals can be. The other side of the establishment, the prison as we all know it today, is presently called Hampden Road. And then you go along it south, and then it sort of segues into Rockingham Road. Was that the way things were in those days?
Yes, so that's exactly it. That was Hampton Road was known as the Rockingham Road,
Yes.
and so that's part of it. And one of the researchers that worked for Peter Fitzsimons has actually given me a map of where she thinks they were on the Rockingham Road, waiting for the prisoners.
So Desmond takes his horses and trap up to the Rockingham Road. They're all expecting the Fenians to be gathered one way and the other at a meeting point, and they're gonna head south down the Rockingham Road. What does Breslin do?
So Breslin, of course, is going to York, remember? So he heads up High Street as if he's heading on what would now be the Canning Highway, I guess. It would eventually go on to what was the Canning Highway, and that would have taken him to York. But once he gets up to what is now Ord Street, I imagine that he turned to there and then went on to the
Old
back of the
Street,
prison, onto the Rockingham
that
Road.
intersection, the prison just on the right. So he takes his trap around the corner, and he's going past the very tall limestone walls with barbed wire and stuff on them, so no one can easily escape. Well, so far so good. What about King?
So King is well mounted, and his job is to remain behind and to find out if there's any alarm raised.
Aha. He's got this, in one sense, he's got the toughest job. And back to the prisoners. You say they get up early. Do they get out on chores, or what happens?
Yes, so they've been up since 5 in the morning. They've folded their beds, tidied their cells, and been fed bread and tea for breakfast. Pretty measly breakfast, Michael, for those who have to work all day. But they assemble in the prison yard for the roll call, and it's noted that all are present and accounted for. And they were assigned to their various warders and marched out to their tasks around the town.
Well,
So we
it's
know.
fascinating, isn't it? What sort of jobs? You mentioned Wilson, was working down near the jetty, and I guess they're all sort of labouring jobs.
Yes, they were. So James Wilson and Michael Harrington, they were both working on the Fremantle jetty. And Robert Cranston, remember the trusted one, he goes off to work unsupervised in the prison storeroom.
Well, that's a bit inconvenient. You want to get out of there.
Well, he can get out because he has, and it's hard to know where this key come from, but he has an amazing key to the governor's. To the prison governor, the controller general,
Yes.
to his house, to
Oh,
the gate of
really?
his house. Yes.
To
So.
Controller General's house, which is a fabulous house, heritage these days, eventually became the first Fremantle hospital, just on the other side of the walls of
That's
the Fremantle
correct.
prison.
That's
So he's
correct.
got the key to it. He's trusted by the Controller General,
Yes.
and I've got a feeling there's somebody up there.
Yes. So he's so. Cranston has this, so he hurries down to, he goes to past Francis Lindsay, the gatekeeper at the prison, and we've still got the gates there at the prison, and the gatekeeper was there, and he says that he has an urgent message from the household of the governor, of the Controller General, that two prisoners are needed to help him move furniture.
Move furniture back in the governor's of the Comptroller General's house.
Correct, correct.
So what does he do?
So he goes down to the South Jetty where the team are working under the watchful eye of Warder Buller. And Cranston repeats the request there and he says that he's been sent to take Wilson and Harrington to help move furniture. Now, Warder Buller didn't come down in the last shower and he's a bit reluctant. But Cranston's got the key and he's assured him that that they wouldn't be away for too long at all, that they'd be returning really soon. So Buller accepts that the order came from a higher authority and he lets them go.
Well, just wait till the Royal Commission comes. Poor old Buller will be first in line. He'll be the scapegoat. One day we can talk about all of that. Poor
Hung,
fellow.
drawn and quartered, Michael, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm feeling badly for him already. So we've got Cranston, Wilson, and Harrington. What do they then do?
They scamper along High Street before turning down one of the side streets, possibly, sort of Mowat or Henry, and then heading off, and then maybe up through Arundel Street or one of those and up to the Rockingham Road.
And we know who's up at the Rockingham Road. Two traps and a couple of horses. Now, what
Correct.
about we haven't mentioned Martin Hogan, another of the Fenians.
Okay, so Martin Hogan's been assigned to paint the veranda of the house.
Oh, wow. Very handy.
Of the prison controller general. So this controller general has quite a few of these people working for him.
And he's worked out the Irish are quite good house painters. As I still are, there's plenty around Freo these days. So, what happens there?
Fauntleroy, of course, the Controller General, is off at the regatta, so he's not around at all. And that morning, Thomas Darragh and Thomas Hassett, they'd both been assigned to planting potatoes near the Clerk of Works, James Broomhall.
Now he's living nearby as well.
He is. So there's all those the houses up along the terrace in front of the prison, a lot of
The warders' cottages and apartments.
correct, correct. There's quite a few scattered around that precinct. So they're under the control of Warder Lidlow. And Hogan goes back to him, he's a painter, and he says, "Oh, look, I need to go back and get a can of kerosene from the storeroom because my paintbrushes are beginning to clog."
And what
So
happened?
while Hogan's away, Warder Lidlow has taken the opportunity to go inside and check. He's got three convicts inside working on cleaning the house chimney
Well, that was convenient.
of the Controller General. And that the Controller General had specifically said to Lidlow, "Don't leave any convicts inside my house without having a close watch on them."
That
So
was
it's
even more convenient. Yes.
very convenient for Hogan that this has happened. So within minutes, of course, Hogan's jumped, slipped away, jumped the fence, gone off and found Darrow and Hassett, and given them the whistle, and off they go, the three of them, running as quick as they can. They're closer up to the Rockingham Road, so they can just sort of, hightail it off down there.
Unbelievable. So we've got Wilson, Harrington, and Cranston, presumably already making their way well and truly. These guys get away. We've got the six Fenians. Presumably they're wearing this, whatever they are, their stars and stripes or whatever, at the convict
Some
attire.
of them would have been wearing convict. I think probably Hassett and Darrow, who were working in the garden, were probably in, gardening clothes of some kind, without those. But the others who were out in the town were probably more in the stripes, typical stripes, yeah.
So the Rockingham Road really figures in all of this. It becomes quite famous. I must take another walk along it in the next few days. So Breslin's got everything in place. They all are working to some sort of time limit, I suppose. Get up there as soon as you can.
Yes, well, Breslin said that he would be there on the road from 7:45 and remain there until 9. So that was the window of opportunity for them to get away. And he pretty much left it to the Fenians to, they had to come up with these plans themselves. But you know, that if the, if you want to get away, you've got to put a bit of effort into it, haven't you?
So, do Bresson and Desmond remain there, or do they take off separately and wait for the convicts to come behind?
Okay, they've instead of being up close to the town where they might be seen, they've gone further down and they've waited under the shade of a tree. And then when they see the first three, that's Wilson, Harrington, and Cranston coming, they Desmond brings his trap and moves up closer so that he can get them. They hop on board Desmond's trap, and then off, and then by this time Breslin's coming up behind back because he's seen the other three in the distance. So he comes, he says to Desmond, "Go on, off you go." And before they're even seated, his Breslin's ready to pick up the second three.
Well, that's probably one of the high points in the movie. They come, they mount the traps, and they start speaking in Gaelic, and off they go down the Rockingham Road. So, how exciting! And what about King? We know
So
that
then
Brennan's gone
King,
early with the bags.
yeah, Brennan's gone early with the bags. Earlier still, Walsh and McCarthy have been at work cutting the telegraph wires.
Aha. Clever.
So they needed to cut the telegraph wires up to Perth, so no message could go from Fremantle to Perth. Someone would have to ride all the way up there, and certainly to cut them south to Albany in case the conflict, remember the ship? Might still be
Yes.
there.
Oh my
Can't get any
goodness.
message through to her. Yeah.
Well, one thing those Fenians will have been good at in the old country in Ireland was snapping communication lines, I should have thought.
Yes. Yeah,
But
they probably would.
that's what they do. So there they are. This is the movie. We've got the drone up in the sky looking down with the camera, and there they are, all galloping as much as horses with traps gallop, with the men in them. Off they go. Has Brennan made it before they all did? He didn't trip over or fall over or anything?
Well, he pretty much did. He almost ended up in Busselton.
Oh, no.
In true Brennan style, he got lost off the road because remember we've heard about this road before. It's quite well built at the start and then it goes into a bit of a sandy track. And Brennan wouldn't have had as much experience in the colony on the roads as the others had.
Well,
So
just
he's
remind our listeners that Captain Anthony never wanted him to set foot on the Catalpa. So, yeah, having spotted him down at Bunbury just a few weeks earlier, he probably thought that was a bad omen. And he sends his fellow on down there. And he does he get to the beach? Does he actually
Well,
cross?
he does eventually crashes. So Anthony's waiting on the beach. Suddenly, this awesome trap kind of just crashes onto the beach and then he runs over them. And of course, it's Brennan.
Well, I think the movie will have us a bit. That'll be the Charlie Chaplin moment
I
or the
think
Marx
so.
Brothers moment
That's
when
right.
we'll all burst laughing as everything falls off the trap and drops to the feet of Captain Anthony. So, what happens at that point?
So this was the time when, just as Brennan was pulling up there, Captain Anthony, a fellow who was nearby, who was grazing his sheep there, a fellow named Bell, a local shepherd, who was in fact an ex-convict himself, he came up. He was suspicious of what was going on with this captain and these people on board on the sitting on Rockingham Beach. He imagined all sorts of things that they were getaways or they were trying to find someone or something. And so he's chatting away to Anthony, and Anthony's giving him the, "Oh, no, it's nothing. I've come for an anchor and, it'll be all right." And of course, up turns Brennan. And Brennan says, "Well, we should shoot him." And Anthony says, "There'll be no shooting. No, there's going to be no shooting."
Oh my goodness. So Brennan, well, anyway, one day we might talk about Brennan. So at this stage, just taking into account everything that's been happening, the Fenians, Breslin and Desmond, well, in order Desmond with his people and then Breslin with his, must be just about to arrive. But they get there okay?
They do. So Anthony realizes that, if Brennan's arrived, the others are coming soon. So he orders the crew to push the whaleboat back to the water and to stand ready, each man in his rowing position. He tells them that they're to obey orders and that no harm will come to them, and that they need to be at the ready.
Well, hang on. We know that Sam knew all about this and Duggan, but these guys must have been wondering from the moment they got into the whaleboat, then the moment after they pulled the whaleboat up into the sand, then the night they slept there, then when all of these guys turn up. I mean, surely they'd have the scales lifted from their eyes sometime about now.
Well, I've read in Anthony's biographer saying that some of the men were ready to defend Captain Anthony against these brigands who were arriving.
Well, it had been carried off well.
He was their
That.
captain. Who were these outsiders coming with their horses and guns and revolvers on, strapped to their legs,
Well, the whole thing had been brilliantly then performed and carried on. So what happens? They all have to get into the work boat.
Yes, well, first Breslin and then Desmond arrive at the beach, and the party have all got, they've given them, no, they've changed, they've got coats on top of their convict outfits. So, but the guys, the Captain Anthony's crew can see that, these fellows are a bit sus, and they've
Don't
all
forget.
got a gun and a holster.
Oh, this makes sense then. We've got arms, we told them earlier. So they're going to be armed, they're ready to fight, and they're going to make their getaway.
And remember, they are ex-military men. They know how to use
Yes.
a revolver. And who knows who was going to come after them at what point? So they needed to be armed, really, if they were going to defend themselves. They were instructed to get aboard the whaleboat and to sit themselves into the smallest possible space so that as not to interfere with the men at the oars. And the captain gave the order, "Shove off and pull for your lives," he said. "Pull as if you're pulling for a whale."
Well, that's good advice. They're all whalers. Very clever. So they must still have been worried, this crew, this is what was going on from what you just said. They were going to defend their captain. They've got all these people who look like they're up to no good. Whether or not they'd seen the guns, they probably had. They would have been a bit nervous, you think?
They would have been, but this captain, even though Anthony, we remember, is at this stage 33 years old, he's not an old man, but he must have had a lot of gravitas. And in the shipping world, what your captain says, "Captain, my captain, away you go." You fall in and you do what you're told.
Well, they were having to pull like they were dealing with a whale, and they had to get back out past Rockingham through that gap out to the Catalpa, sometime out the other side of Garden Island.
And
So,
avoid the reefs there as
and
well.
avoid the reefs. Bit easier if you're in the whale boat, but I mean it's only a whale boat. It's not a grand thing that's been at the regatta in Perth. Is it designed to take all of these? I think I added them up earlier, 16 people.
That's right, Michael. 16. So, coming in, there were six of them, and they were, tossed around on the waves out there. And now they're going back with an extra 10 people. So that's a lot of people. Must have sat very low in the water, this whaleboat, at this stage. But they were a good 2 miles offshore when they saw the mounted police ride up to the spot where they had embarked and then slowly drive their horses and wagons that the escapees had left on the beach.
Oh my goodness. So the word gets out, things are happening. The exhilaration that they must have felt at some point, particularly when they felt the whaleboat moving through the water and are starting to get past, oh, it would start to dissipate, I reckon, Margot. Although you perhaps just start pulling harder.
I think
Oh.
it would be hard to know whether the Fenians really felt they had escaped. I guess they'd have, if it was me, I think I'd be waiting till I got on board the Catalpa to really feel like I got there.
It's not over till the proverbial fat lady sings, as they say at the opera. We weren't at the opera here. We're not all over until they're on the catalpa and sailing away with no one chasing it. Well, Breslin probably felt pretty confident at this point. Did
Oh,
he
yes, but
ever,
Breslin was
did he
full of
ever,
confidence all the time, wasn't he?
yeah,
So
did he ever pen a letter to anybody?
he did. He penned a letter to the governor and he sent it by ocean mail.
What does that mean?
Well, some people think that he attached it to a float, and others think that it was probably a letter in a bottle.
Oh,
And we never
now hang
know.
on. Hang on. Breslin is a great performer, he's a great actor, he's a great operator. He wouldn't have just thrown it in a bottle and hoped it was found somewhere. He would have done the first thing, attach it to a float, something obvious, that have more of a chance to be in to see it, more of a chance to be seen. So do we know what it said?
Oh, yes, it said, and I'll read it to you, Michael. To His Excellency, the British Governor of Western Australia, this is to certify that I have this day released from the clemency of Her Most Gracious Majesty Victoria, Queen of Great Britain, etc., 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 six Irishmen condemned to imprisonment for life by the enlightened and magnanimous government of Great Britain.
Oh.
For having been guilty of the atrocious and unpardonable crime known to the unenlightened portion of mankind as love of country and hatred of tyranny. For this act of Irish assurance, my birth and blood being my full and sufficient warrant, allow me to add that in taking my leave now, I've only to say, a few cells I've emptied, a cell in its way, I've the honour and pleasure to bid you good day. From all further acquaintance, excuse me, I pray, in the service of my country, John J. Breslin.
Whoa, what a letter. And that really will have a very high point in the movie. The people rolling around with bottles of liquor and laughing their head off and admiring his poetry. And no doubt he'll indicate that Mary, back in the pub on those long, lonely nights, helped him put all of this together. Oh, but they're stuck out in the whaleboat. They haven't got to the catalpa.
No.
They've spotted this mob down on the water.
So the word is out.
The word is out.
They've yet to get to the Catalpa, Michael.
Oh gosh, and we don't have any more time to go on today.
No.
What could possibly go wrong?
Well, nothing really, could it?
Oh well, I need more than a cup of tea today, Margot. I'm going off to have an orange juice. And think about this and. Oh, look, thank you for joining me today. And dear listeners, we'll be back before too long
I
with.
think we better do it relatively quickly so that the listeners don't sort of, die of suspense here, Michael.
And well, I get angry letters from our listeners telling me, where is it? Where is it? Episode 11, folks. Don't you worry about it. You'll be getting it before long. See you, Margot.
Bye, Michael.